What is up, Level Up Nation? Welcome to episode 146 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined for the 146th time, a true honor, it truly is, by the king of the courtside, Joey. What's up, buddy?
John, I'm exhausted, just like you. It's been a long couple days, probably a long couple 2 weeks for us over here.
Yeah, it has been an incredibly long 2 weeks. Listeners, viewers on Twitch, if you can probably hear it in both Joey and I's voices. Absolutely exhausted. Joey, why are you exhausted first? I'm kind of curious.
Just a lot going on at work. I have some new coworkers that I've been helping train. On top of that, I had my sister's wedding this past weekend. The Nationals are making good moves. There's just so much happening right now.
I feel you. I'm right there with the Nationals. Losing my voice on a day in, day out, it feels like there. I was dumb enough to go to a concert last night, so my voice is still struggling. Breaking news, I do not have alcohol for the drink of choice. I'm sticking with water. I'm going to go and throw that out there right now, Joey. That's how bad my voice actually hurts. But yeah, I'm ready for a nap, dude.
The struggle has been real. So I also smoked a cigar at my sister's wedding this weekend. Yeah. So I have this thing where I can drink tons of alcohol and not really feel all that much. But when it comes to cigars, it just wiped me. I was falling asleep at the end. I was dying. And my throat still feels the effects of this sucker.
Are you sure that was a cigar that you were? I don't want to know. I don't want to know the answer to that, Joey. Nation, make sure you follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You love how I cut you off right there. That is at the Level Up Podcast. That's at the LVLUP Podcast. And while you're on Twitter, why not give Joey and I a follow as well? You can see what kind of escapades we're up to for those 2 weeks that we're both so tired and losing our voices over. Find Joey at Courtside King, myself at Fiasco. If you're watching here live on Twitch, welcome. As always, you'll find those amazing handles below those beautiful mugshots you are currently staring at on your mobile or computer device right now. And if you're on a podcatcher of your choice later on down the road, we'll have those in the show notes for you below as well. And Nation, just one more favor while you're at it. Please leave us a review on your favorite podcatcher of choice. Level Up Podcast is now available on Spotify, Stitcher, as well as iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud. Reviews do go a long way in helping the show grow and reach new listeners, so when you do have a moment, we would be super appreciative if you took small time out of your day to leave us an awesome review. Nation, like we said, it's been 2 weeks. We have a lot of catching up to do. League of Legends Worlds 2019 is in full swing. Riot Games finally has earned the S at the end of their name. And there's so much more going on. Joey, I don't even know how we're going to do this. How are we going to pack all this into this episode? But what else are we squeezing into episode 146?
There's no way we can pack everything from the last 2 weeks. So we've picked out some things here and there. We're going to jump in with a bunch from a Worlds catch-up for League of Legends. We have the Riot 10th anniversary stream that we have to hit on. Obviously, the Activision Blizzard stuff that's been in the news surrounding Hong Kong and much, much more.
All right, Joey, we have our topics. I don't know how we're going to do this. I don't want to waste any more time. It's time for the drink of choice. I already gave my little teaser. I'm sticking with the water, staying hydrated. Hopefully my voice not giving out later on during this podcast. Joey, what are you drinking today?
So I had plenty of alcohol this weekend, so I am going water as well, but I'm kind of going bougie water. I'm going with Spindrift, which I really like with a fruit twist to it. Like there's lemon and raspberry. This one is cucumber, though. And honestly, guys, I hate cucumber water. But I'm drinking it because we got to get rid of them, and we have about two left, and someone's got to do it. So here
Bless
I
your
am.
Sacrificer. You're taking one for the team, and I do appreciate it. Bougie water is definitely correct. I'm sticking with Deer Park, and you're over there with like some $8, 8-ounce can of bougie water over there. You know what, Joey? I don't know what I'm going to do with you. Joey, I don't want to waste any more time. We got so much to talk about. Let's jump right into gaming and esports news. Let's go.
Let's do it, John. The struggle is real here, and it is real all over multiple esports leagues as well because of all the roster moves. So we have Overwatch League in the postseason. NBA 2K League is starting back up soon. They're in their draft phase as well as their postseason. We have the there's so many. I mean, League of Legends, Worlds is still going on, but so many teams have ended their season as well. So it's just roster mayhem right now. There are constant moves, and John and I, we can keep up with a lot of teams, but we can't keep up with every single roster move while they're happening constantly. So we'll update you guys later on down the road once the dust starts to settle on that a bit. Been a lot of major moves for Overwatch League, quite a few for League of Legends as well. One in particular that's really going to change the landscape of free agency for those aging players, I guess we'll call them. Players like Bjergsen, players like Soaz. One in particular, Bjergsen re-signed with TSM. They did a really interesting teaser that I think most of us would call lame, but hey, it worked out. Bjergsen is going back to TSM, but he is coming on as a partial owner as well. So he did get some of the ownership rights to TSM. We'll touch on all of that next week once we have the rest of a lot of these roster shakedowns again. It's going to go until January for League of Legends. We won't hit everything, but I feel like the initial first few weeks is really where a lot of the movement happens.
Yeah, it's definitely exciting watching all these roster moves come out. That Bjergsen thing was an absolute joke. But yeah, no, it's really cool. Free agency in full swing in two major leagues, for sure, the NBA 2K League and Overwatch. You're going to see more roster moves towards the end of Worlds for League of Legends. Really exciting time. And again, Joey, like you said, when the dust settles down, I can't wait to hit on all these amazing roster moves and shaking up the landscape, really, in all of these different leagues.
Yeah, so as the dust settles, as the offseason continues to move toward the real season, we'll hit on a bunch more of those. In other news, as far as industry acquisitions or startups, we're going to have to hit on the Washington Post unveiling Launcher. It's a new section devoted to covering video games and esports, and it's debuting this week. This week, as we're recording, John, I believe it debuted yesterday.
Yeah, on the 15th of October was their official launch date. Really cool. Love what they're doing. It's kind of, they definitely have that like nerdy feel to what they're reporting on. Like, they go in depth in a lot of really cool gaming stories right now, not so much esport content. I know they are dabbling into that as well, but right now a lot of the early content coming out from Launcher is a lot of video game like history and like original gamers from like the early 90s that kind of like paved the way for competitive esports. A lot of really cool articles there. If you do have access to the Washington Post, I definitely recommend checking it out. If you don't or you're not in the D.C. area, they do have an online section of it as well. Their social media game is actually pretty good. Joe, I don't know if you saw this, but they even have a TikTok account. And they're treating it more like Vine. If you remember what Vine was back in the day, it feels like. But it's actually really funny. Their first TikTok was... I believe it was Gene, one of the reporters there, was pouring a cup of coffee, but he was getting lost watching the Fortnite black hole when it got sucked into the black hole. So it was kind of funny. And, you know, it gives a little personality to, you know, a newspaper that's known for breaking really major international news. So it's kind of cool. It's kind of funny. And I couldn't be happier that the Washington Post is doing this covering gaming and esports going forward.
Right, and I think that's the biggest thing, that one of the most well-known newspapers out there, the New York Times, the Washington Post being one of those top three, top five in the United States, now picking up esports. We've seen it cover articles before. We've actually been a part of some of the articles they've covered in the D.C. area, but now branching out and saying this is a complete section dedicated to gaming and esports, a regular section at that, which means great national coverage. More coverage for gaming and esports, which only means it's going to continue to grow more and more as we go. Moving on into partnerships, we have Pain Gaming moving full speed ahead and picking up a new partner in BMW Brazil. The deal includes a jersey sponsorship, content creation, event activations, and image rights. John, I want to say this is like the second or third BMW sponsorship deal we've seen in recent years, your team Cloud9 being one of the others.
Yeah, BMW really crushing it. Really a lot of car manufacturers are making a big play into esports. You see it with Honda, Team Liquid. You see it with Mercedes-Benz and SK Gaming. You see it with BMW now sponsoring, I know for a fact it's at least two teams, possibly three now. It's weird seeing this actually happen in esports. Normally these major car manufacturers are like sponsoring major soccer clubs, major sports organizations, major leagues around the world. And now esports has gotten to the point now where BMW, Mercedes, Audi, they're all sponsoring esport events now. And it's absolutely insane to think like that's where we are in the world of esports right now, that these luxury car manufacturers are sponsoring esport events and esport teams. It's absolutely insane. I love this deal. It just brings more money into the ecosystem for esports, and it's going to make the entire environment that much better.
Yes, it will. Yeah, BMW is being one of those big ones that continues to dive in more. Toyota is another one. I believe Porsche has got involved. So like John said, there's going to be more and more automobile companies that continue to get involved throughout all these different scenes. Rocket League pulls in quite a few as well. And it kind of makes sense with all the rocket-powered cars, you know? Yeah. Maybe that's BMW's next thing, rocket-powered cars to score virtual soccer goals. You never
I couldn't
know.
Afford it anyway, so it doesn't matter.
But you can afford Axe Body Spray. League of Legends has picked up Axe as its new global sponsor in a multi-year deal signing, which is naming Axe as the league's official men's grooming partner. Sorry, Gillette, you'll have to move over on this one.
So you and I go to conventions every now and then, and conventions and e-sport events kind of have like a similar stereotype that goes with it, that there's this odor, if you will. I'm not gonna say where the odor comes from, but there is an odor, and I believe there is one of the Overwatch voice actresses even pointed that out, and she even complimented us on the fact that we looked well groomed when we met her, which I thought was absolutely hysterical. But having experienced these conventions and a lot of esport events, Joey, I find this highly ironic, but yet very right in the world of esports gaming and conventions. I actually like this deal a lot. I think it's great. Axe definitely makes that push to the teen market and the young adult market. I'm a big fan of Axe products. I use Axe hair gel. I think it's great. Their body spray smells fantastic. It's amazing. So it's definitely a demographic that makes sense for Axe. And yeah, I mean, the joke's right itself, but I actually like this sponsorship quite a bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's a really good deal. I mean, when you think like gamers and you think products like this, like hygiene-based products, I feel like most people go to Axe. Most people go to, I was going to say Red Bull, but that's energy drink. What's the other one I'm thinking? Old Spice. Old Spice and Axe seem to be the two go-to for this genre, and this is a big, big deal. If you're looking at any particular esports scene out there right now, League of Legends is one of the biggest one. You're not only jumping in as an LCS sponsor, as an LEC sponsor, you're jumping in as the global sponsor. You're saying, let me sponsor MSI, let me sponsor Worlds, let me sponsor the biggest esports competitions in the world with this move, and I think for Axe, this is going to pay off quite handsomely. I don't know how big their market is over in Asia and Europe so far. North America, it feels like they have a pretty good hold on the market. Again, right up there with Old Spice, they kind of compete here and there. But do you know anything about their market in Europe or Asia?
You know, it's funny. I was actually just about to ask you that same question. I know in North America, they have a very strong foothold. You know, in America, in Canada, and I believe even in Mexico, they have a very strong presence. But outside of the North American continent, I actually do not know what their marketing plans are, if they even have a marketing plan for outside North America, if they have any kind of presence outside of North America. So if they don't, or if they're looking to grow what they already have, this is actually a great opportunity. League of Legends being huge in Asian markets, huge in Europe, this is a great way to really kind of open that door and introduce your products to other cultures, other countries, other people, and really kind of expand what Axe has already done incredibly well over the past 8 years and expand into international markets. I think it's a great, great idea for Axe to partner up with League of Legends. It's almost a win-win in their case.
Right. And Europe is a big one, but in particular, Asia. I mean, you look at how many viewers watch from the Asian continent. I mean, China alone brings in so many viewers, and South Korea with a ton as well. So if they're able to, whether they're already in that market or whether they're new to that market, continue to expand into that market, continue to market into that market through this esports deal, I think it's going to be a really good move for them. Not as big, G2 Esports partners with blockchain firm HDEC Technology. An HDEC logo will be added to G2's CSGO and PUBG jerseys. Not all their teams, just the PUBG and CSGO jerseys. And HDEC will outfit G2's facilities with smart device integration as well. So I don't think we need to spend too much time on this one. I think it's a good deal for G2. It is interesting, and we've seen this a little bit throughout esports, where certain jersey sponsors will only buy in for certain team jerseys within an organization. I think a lot of that just comes down to price pool. Where do you think your market is within the market? I guess HDEC feels that CSGO and PUBG are the way to go. Maybe G2's League of Legends team is a little too pricey with how well they're doing right now. I think there's a lot of factors like that to consider, but it is a new relationship that G2 is building upon, and they're already growing so far in their sponsorship database, and now HDEC being added to that as well.
And when you really think about it, it's actually a win-win for both. Like, not only does the sponsoring company get to pick and choose what teams their logo appears on for their jersey, but from an esport organization perspective, that's two different jerseys now. If you make it slightly more different, like, you know, you saw some teams come out putting stars over their logos now for international championships they've won or so on and so forth. You can sell that separately. You can sell that as, hey, this is our CSGO jersey. This is our Dota 2 jersey. This is our League of Legends jersey. And while they look somewhat similar, there are differences to it. That's enough to get people to buy multiple jerseys. People want to be able to represent their team with, you know, authentic jerseys, authentic gear, the same gear the pros wear. You see it in traditional sports. You see it in esports now, too. If you offer multiple jerseys with slight differences in them, people are going to buy the jersey. And especially if you throw the phrase limited edition or limited time, they're going to fly off the shelf. Consumerism is at an all-time high, and esports is ready to benefit from it even more than it already is, really. But this is a win-win for both the organization and the esport organization because of that ability to sell multiple versions of their jersey.
Now, while I do agree with you, and I think it's a brilliant idea, I don't think that's exactly how this one works in particular. I think they do have to pay a premium to be on those jerseys that are sold as well. Unless it's something like a Worlds, maybe a CSGO Major, different big events like that, I think they will do those special branded jerseys. But for this, I think it's just what the team is wearing on stage in particular. It didn't really specify, but at least from what I've seen on the Fnatic and C9 side, I think that's how it goes.
No, agreed.
But I do think you're brilliant. In fact, if I were you and I were an organization, I think I would do exactly what you just said. Fnatic has extended their partnership with Rivalry, who is a market leader in esports betting, to a multi-year deal. Rivalry will continue to have access to global image rights of the players and will work in collaboration with Fnatic to develop engaging content to be hosted on Rivalry's community hub. Again, John, not one we really have to touch on too much. I think it's just another good deal for Fnatic, another big organization in EU, really locking down a sponsor for a multi-year deal. And I think that's the biggest thing of anything to hit on of these last two. It's the fact that we're not just seeing new sponsorships, but we're seeing the continuation of sponsorships. That means something is going right. The relationship's working. Both sides are seeing some kind of benefit in the partnership, and they've decided not to just extend it 1 year, not to just cancel it, but to extend it in general and to extend it multi-years at that. I think that's a really, really big win for esports in general.
Big win. It shows stability. And in the business world, stability is where the money is. You want to be able to know that your investment is you know, it's your money's going to come back and you're going to be able to make money. There is almost no better sign in business than having that partnership being renewed over and over and over for an extended period of time, because it works. Two organizations trust each other. They've shown confidence in one another, and the product they're putting out is getting results. It is such a great thing to see in esports, these deals of organizations that had a small partnership in the beginning, maybe a 1, 2, 3 year deal, and now re-upping to 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 plus year deals. That is absolutely fantastic for the ecosystem for esports. I could not be more excited for Fnatic and Rivalry.
Now, speaking of deals that I would love to see renewed, Fnatic and Cloud9, they've partnered up for a limited time collaboration and pop-up in Berlin running through October 21st. John, I love this. They've had this little bromance relationship thing going on for Twitter for, wait, it feels like a year, year and a half at this point. Oh, yeah, rub the flag. I would rub mine, but I keep being too lazy to hang it up. Anyway, so I think this is a great deal. This is them coming together. They made this unified logo where it almost looks like the Fnatic logo with the Cloud9 symbol wrapped around it like it's hugging it. On top of that, I haven't seen a ton of merch, but I did see they have like a longer version of a hoodie with a Fnatic guy and a Cloud9 girl kind of labeled or stenciled on the back of it. What are your thoughts? Have you seen any other apparel from them?
No, I think I've seen the same drawing get thrown onto the merch, but I freaking love it. Fnatic is an organization I admire and I'm a big fan of from an esport perspective. Cloud9 obviously being my org, the org that, you know, I have a flag behind me for Pete's sake. You know, I love it. I think it's absolutely great. The organizations for over the past year, it feels like, has been more public with that relationship that they have. They make no secret that in Worlds, they actually share a lot of information. They'll do scrims together. They'll talk strategy. A lot of organizations do it, but Fnatic and Cloud9 have that synergy. They have that, let's call it a bromance. They have that bromance. I just find it highly ironic, Joey, that the two hosts of this show, you and I, you being a diehard Fnatic fan and I being a diehard Cloud9 fan, I want to know why I cannot get this unless I'm in Berlin. I feel like if anybody in the world deserves this, it's us.
So I haven't looked into that. Is there going to be shipping?
I have no idea.
See, I need to look at it too. Either. I'm not a big long hoodie wearer. I usually don't wear hoodies in general, as I'm wearing one tonight. But ironically, I usually do not. So I'm kind of curious if there's any other merch, if they are shipping it. I feel like this might be something they do limited time at the pop-up and then later on re-up it and allow for people to kind of order it down the road. But I would not be surprised to see more come out of these two. And in general, I think it started with the social media relationship, to be honest. The fact that both of these social media posters for Fnatic and Cloud9 are such meme-heavy posters, I think they really clicked with one another and they were able to post on each other's posts very easily. And then from there, it just kind of blossomed. And here we are, a little co-collaboration with an awesome logo. Okay, now to get into a bit of the grittier stuff here. In other news, and I'm sure every one of you has probably heard about this, we're just going to give you our take on it. Activision Blizzard and the Hearthstone rulings. So there's quite a bit here. We'll kind of jump down and just hit the facts first, and then we'll kind of give opinions after that. Blizzard removed Hearthstone player Blitz Chung from Hearthstone Grandmasters, rescinded all of his prize money, and suspended him from pro play for 1 year for taking a stance against the Hong Kong government, stating Liberate Hong Kong, Revolution of Age, and this was in an interview after he won a tournament. Blizzard also fired both casters working the event. Neither caster was believed to have any idea that Blizz Chung would make the comments he did in the interview. From there on, there is an update later down the road, and I believe this update was just from this past weekend. Blizzard restored Blizz Chung's winnings and reduced his suspension. The casters were suspended for 6 months after the ruling as well. So the casters are back, 6 month suspension. Blizz Chung is back, 6 month suspension, and he gets his prize winnings back. We'll come back to this one. Jumping to the next story. So American University, this is a continuation of this first one. Blizzard decided not to penalize American University for holding up a free Hong Kong boycott Blizzard sign. AU went on to forfeit their next match, stating that it was hypocritical, I like that word, of Blizzard to punish Blizz Chung, but not them. And that has been updated as well. So now, instead of allowing them to play that next match, which they forfeited anyway, they are now serving a 6 month ban, which is now issued. Last but not least, Overwatch, or Blizzard in this case, ended up canceling their Overwatch Nintendo Switch launch event at the Nintendo World Store. So again, all this drama started with Hearthstone. It started at an event, I believe it was held in Hong Kong, where this began. And then from there, we've seen Blizzard make very harsh movements up front, and then from there, not as harsh ones with American University, and then it's all been twisted back and forth, and it's looking like the majority of them are now 6 months bans, but no fines involved. Okay, so John, I'll let you jump in first, because I'm sure you have quite a bit to say on this. What are your thoughts on this whole situation, and how it's unraveled, first of all, and then what happened with the adjustments being made on the Activision Blizzard side?
So, my biggest thing here is I'm disappointed in Blizzard and their lack of consistency. I can understand where they as an organization are coming from, not wanting to get political. It is their stream. It is their competition. It makes sense. I don't agree with the original rulings, especially how Blizz Chung was, suspended for a year, lost all of his money. But then the American University team got absolutely nothing for essentially doing the exact same thing. That was disappointing. I do think the community outrage was just from the Blizzard fan base. I feel like Blizzard, a lot of people give Blizzard a hard time for not listening to the community. I feel like they did a good job at listening to the community. 6 month suspension, gave his money back. I think I am okay with that. I'm not okay with how long it took. I'm not okay with the original ruling, but I will give Activision Blizzard the benefit of the doubt there when it comes to restoring. I feel like they did kind of react harshly. And let's be real here. The climate in this situation, the news regarding Hong Kong is a very hot topic. Even the NBA is in hot water. over team owners that have made comments on social media in regards to China and Hong Kong. So it's a very hot topic, and it just so happened it trickled into esports. Tensions were already high, and it was Blizzard trying to do damage control. I do firmly believe that, but I do feel like they may have messed up there. But I do think the new rulings of 6 months and restoring his earnings and the casters only being suspended for 6 months, I think a lot of people in the community are fine with that. And the consistency there, then handing down that same ruling to the American University players as well, I think that's justified as well. I think it needs to remain consistent. I think that's the one thing esports fans want. They want that consistency. It's a hot mess, Joey, and I don't want to dive into politics on here, but I feel like Blizzard's in a really tough spot now, and it's not exactly a good time for Blizzard to be in this spot. You have BlizzCon coming up. You have Overwatch World Cup coming up at BlizzCon. There's so many major events coming up for Blizzard right now. There's the end of Battle for Azeroth for World of Warcraft. That expansion's coming to a close. Major expansions are coming out for WoW Classic. There's so much going on with Blizzard right now. This was the last thing they needed, is to have some kind of controversy like this.
Right, and there's so much to touch on, and you've touched on a lot of it already. I think part of it is just how quickly they did the damage control. This penalty came out very quickly without really any warning to our knowledge. Now, on the devil's advocate side, I don't know what the players sign. There is a potential that waivers are signed, that different statement media releases are signed prior to these tournaments. So I don't know if there's anything in those statements, not necessarily limiting the freedom of speech, but in a sense doing that, saying you can say this sort of stuff, you cannot get this political on air, different things like that. So again, I don't know what the player signed, so I think that's part that we really can't comment on without knowing. In addition to this, I think you hit another big point, and it's the fact that we need some equality in these punishments. When one person does one thing and another group does the same thing and then gets punished, well, not punished at all at first, they were let off and they were able to play their next match had they not forfeited. I think that's another big issue. And I feel like that is just Blizzard floundering a little bit. They knew they went a little too harsh with the first one and they tried to pull back on the second one, but they ended up pulling back too far. I think what we're seeing now, and again, I agree with you on this, a six month ban as well as all the funds for the winnings going back to BlizzChung, I think, is the way to go, as well as the American University players getting their suspension as well. I think Blizzard found a happy medium, in a sense, as happy as you're going to get with this particular topic. Anything when it comes down to politics is very tough. You walk a very thin line, especially when you're speaking out about against China and you're owned by, well, not necessarily fully owned, but there are definitely big stakeholders from Chinese companies like Tencent in Activision Blizzard. Yeah, you can argue, hey, they want that Chinese money. They want to continue to build into the Chinese market, and this is one way to hurt that. But then on the other side, you have to say, like, hey, these guys, these employees have to answer to these people in these companies that hold their shares. So, again, I don't want to support the business side, but I think there are different aspects to consider. All in all, said and done, I think Blizzard Activision went too hard with the initial penalties and then too light with the American University penalties. Now we're seeing a more even penalty. I still think 6 months might be a little too high, again, depending if the player signed any type of release forms beforehand. If there was a warning, though, then I think 6 months makes sense. At the same point, this is something that needs to be made clear and maybe needs to be put in statements moving forward with players, as far as this is what you can say, this is what you can't say. You don't want players to get silenced. You want them to be able to speak their mind, to be comfortable when they're doing these interviews. But there is a line that needs to be drawn, in a sense that you don't want anyone getting hurt either. Because in doing so, with this whole boycott Blizzard thing, yes, you can get back at the CEO and the chairman and all these big level people and top shareholders, but you also hurt the individual designers who are pouring their passion into the game as well. If John's a character designer, he wants you to experience his character. He wants you to enjoy that environment or that character that is being designed or the lore that's being written up. And in doing these things like boycotting, yes, we can in a sense get back to the, or go up against this big giant of a company that wants this Chinese money, but then you also hurt all the people below, and they could end up losing their jobs. They could end up just creating content with no passion anymore because other people are not playing it. So it's a very thin line of balance. I think it's good to speak up against these companies, but you also want to remember everyone else involved. A few CEOs make a decision, but at the same point, there are so many hundreds of developers and other players out there as well.
Yeah, and Joey, I think you hit a major point there I just want to touch on real quick. Is that, you know, a decision of 2 to 3 high-ranking level people, their voice is the one that people hear. It's not the 500, 600, 700, 800 people working below them. It's not the people who punch time cards for a living. It's not the people that, you know, sit at home developing these games on their own free time because they're passionate about what they do. They're passionate about that storyline. They're passionate about that character that they're helping to develop because they truly do care about this game and the community that follows that game so much. And you saw people with those companies speak out against their own company's rulings. So it does show you that, you know, there may be a disconnect between upper management and the rest of the community and the rest of the business organization itself. So while I do understand the whole boycott Blizzard aspect of it too, I do agree you are punishing the wrong people. Because at the end of the day, when you boycott Blizzard, you're essentially boycotting the people who have that job to make a living, not the upper, you know, 1% of an organization that's going to get the money regardless whether you rescribe or you re-up your WoW subscription or not. So that's kind of like where I feel like I'm at personally. Now, I know a lot of people are talking like, okay, I'm not going to do the BlizzCon virtual pass this year because of this and so forth. Cool. That is your own prerogative, that you have the right to your opinion. If you don't want to do it, awesome, cool, don't do it. Do what you feel is right as a person, as a gamer. But let's also be real here, Joey. You did mention organizations. It's not just Activision Blizzard doing this. Riot Games even put out a statement to players, casters, and people in the organization that during Worlds, it is not to be brought up. Don't talk about it. Don't have any kind of like leading questions and so on and so forth. And you know, the difference in this case is Blizzard has a, you know, at Tencent, the major Chinese gaming company, has a 5% stake in Activision Blizzard. They own 100% of Riot Games. So that is, you know, a factor there as well. But again, like you said, Joey, with politics, it's such a hot topic. You really don't want that leaking into Worlds. You really don't want that leaking into your competitive scene because people use esports as a way to escape the world, to use it as a break from all the negatives that go on in this game we call life, you know, that we want to break from it. So I can understand where they're coming from. But again, people, you have your own decisions. You have your own opinions. If it speaks to you one way or the other, follow it. If you feel like boycotting these companies is the right thing to do, that's your decision. If you don't want to do it, if you don't want to boycott, that's also your decision. But I feel like it's a very sticky situation that people really need to focus. It is a big deal. That it's a big thing going on in our world today, and it is affecting esports. So it is such a tough topic, Joey. But it's one that has the potential to seriously impact esports going forward.
Definitely. And I think you hit the big nail on the head. And I think this is really what Activision Blizzard, as well as Riot Games, and any of these other major sport or esport people are trying to get at. When you're doing events like this, you want to keep it fun. You want to keep it engaged in the game itself, whether that be League of Legends, whether it be Overwatch, Hearthstone, whether it be an NFL game. You don't want to make it political. You want it to be a fun environment for everyone to really compete against one another and to have fun cheering on your team as a fan. In bringing stuff like this up, you end up diversifying in a negative way. You almost split the population. Like, it's one thing to have 49ers and Seahawks fans cheering against each other and having some fun watching a game play out. It's another to bring something completely political, which in a sense can endanger the company, could potentially endanger the workers of the company if people begin these boycotts and different things like that. So there are just so many factors to consider, and I think sometimes people just work on the passions that come to mind. Again, I'm not making a full opinion on this thing. I think the player had something he wanted to support, and he had a reason to do so. At the same point, I think Activision Blizzard had a reason to come down and punish him for it. Again, I don't want to say that punishing free speech is a good thing, because it isn't, but at the same point, we don't know what the player signed. We don't know what the other stakeholders of Activision Blizzard are. I did not do that research. I know Tencent is one of them with about 5%. But again, there are so many other factors to consider here. And I think really, if we look at everything all summed up together, it's better just to leave politics out of these fun events. And at the same point, we need to consider all factors involved when making decisions of stuff like boycotting or when making decisions of negatively supporting products. Because it isn't just a few people affected. It can trickle on down all the way. If you piss off a CEO, he could fire people. He could end up cutting back pensions. I mean, there's just so many different things that can happen. So I think one thing overall is just considering all factors involved, no matter which way you move forward with stuff like this. But at the same point, just go into it wanting to have fun. If you want to make a stance, do it on your Twitter profile. I mean, why not tweet it out? Obviously, there's a bigger audience when it comes to major events like this. But at the same point, do you really want to ruin people's day by doing that? Do you really want to ruin your career by doing that? And if you do, then that's your decision to make. I'm not going to make it for you. But it is different things to consider, both as the player making the statement, the company making the statement, and as fans moving forward as well. Okay, I think that's about as unbiased as we can get on that one. Think for the most part, right?
I was sweating there a little bit. I was like, oh man, how are we going to do this one?
So we'll let you guys decide on that one, but there's a few different facts laying out for you guys. This one will really come as a big surprise to a lot of people. Sony has announced their next console will be named the PlayStation 5. Whew, did you see that one coming, John?
At least PlayStation knows how to count. Just going to throw that out there.
Yes. PlayStation does know how to count. They have made it to 5. They are working their way. Not quite a decade. We're at half a decade now for PlayStation come holiday 2020. I can't say I'm surprised that it's launching the same time as the next Xbox either. It feels like the PlayStation 2 did not. I think it launched before. But since the PlayStation 2, it feels like they've really aligned as far as launches go. I think that hurts Xbox in the long run more than PlayStation. PlayStation really pushing those console exclusive games, Xbox making that branch out. First of all, they didn't have as many big exclusives this generation, but then moving forward stating that their exclusives will be on PC, they're going to be on console, they're really open to other devices and other platforms. We even see some going over to the Nintendo Switch as well. So I think PlayStation is going to come out very strong out of the gate for the console. At the same point, I think it's almost guaranteed at this point that the Xbox will be a much stronger system hardware base going into 2020. Anything else to touch on that surprising name?
I'm going to go ahead and throw this out there, Joey. In 8 years, we will have the PlayStation 6. You heard it here first. Level Up Podcast. You got this.
I think we're only going to get like one more console generation. I really don't think we're going to get that many more. I think it'll be small PCs after that.
Possibly. We'll have to see how the tech industry plays out, because I think one of the biggest things that saved consoles was the fact that really the PlayStation 2 and the Xbox, when it came out, they weren't marketed as solely gaming consoles. They were a full home entertainment console. It was a package deal. And really the other thing to point out, too, in that generation, that was also the generation that we had the huge battle between HD DVD and Blu-ray. Sony went Blu-ray, Microsoft Xbox went HD DVD, and I believe it was like a couple years after that we saw Blu-ray was the winner in that compact disc war, and then the re-upped version of the Xbox that came out was now able to read both versions, both HD DVDs and Blu-ray, so that's kind of cool. But that is something to take into account, is that's how video game consoles have evolved into full home entertainment systems. So that is a really good point. What is the next step for consoles? What are they going to do next? Are we going to look at mini computers? Are we looking at, you know, a portable high def 4K device that's like the size of a tablet? You know, we're kind of seeing that right now with the Switch in some aspects of portable gaming with amazing graphics and gaming capabilities. So you're right. Who knows? This may be the end of the line of the console wars traditionally as we know after this next generation. Who knows?
That we'll have to wait and see. But there will be different people leading the charge heading into this next generation. Sean Layden, the chairman of Sony, has stepped down in quote marks here. We really don't know if he stepped down by his own will or if he was asked to step down. It sounds more like he was asked to. He hasn't really made a statement on it. A lot of people are speculating from sources inside the company that he was asked to move on, that he was not agreeing with some of the higher level guys or with some of the other people around his team, and they eventually asked him to move on. And since then, we've seen Sony make a bunch of different really reverts in a sense. We've seen them move forward with backwards compatibility. That's going to be something we see now in the next generation, as well as a few other factors here and there. So they are doing some different things as far as that goes. And I don't know if those were Layden-based decisions or if those were something else. But we do see him stepping down in this case. Onto the opposite side, we have Mike Ybarra leaving Microsoft after 20 years. He was most recently their corporate vice president of gaming. I believe he leaves this week. We don't know where he's going, but we do know it's of his own choice to step down there. He had a great time at Microsoft. They loved him there. The fans love him. He's constantly playing with fans, both on PC and Xbox. He will be moving on to a new project, and we don't know what that is quite yet. Call of Duty franchise team names. Oh, these are fun, boys and girls. Some of these are rumored. Some have been officially confirmed. I have a feeling the majority of them will be officially confirmed. But I would love to hear some fan feedback on this. Go ahead and tweet at us. Go ahead and shoot us an email. Let us know. Or in chat if you're live here with us. Some of these names are, let's go with unique. We have the Atlanta FaZe, Optic Los Angeles, the Seattle Surge, Chicago Huntsmen, which I think is actually spelled wrong, Minnesota Rocker, Dallas Empire, the Los Angeles Gorillas, and no, not the big hairy apes, gorillas like military, the Paris Legion, London Royal Ravens, Florida Mutineers, the New York Subliners, and the Toronto Ultra. John, I think I would take about three of these team names and give the rest right back.
There's only one that I like. There's only one, and that's Toronto Ultra. I actually like that name, and I'm going to tell you why, because Ultra has the history of that word real quick comes from like Ultra Fanatic. Like it's someone who is a strong believer in something or some organization that is incredibly passionate and outward about it. You see it in soccer culture. You have the Ultra section, the supporter section, that they're crazy. They jump up and down. They sing, they chant. They support their team nonstop. I actually like the Ultra name here, and I feel like it really does connect with esport fans. There are fans out there that are super devoted and dedicated to their organization of choice. I like that name Ultra quite a bit. The one thing that I don't understand, Joey, before you tell me the names that you like, because I'm actually curious about that. Actually, tell me that first. What team names do you like first?
Again, not my favorite names out there. The Seattle Surge I can do. I don't think it's bad. I think you can have fun. Really getting imaginative with the logo and your uniform colors. I really like the Paris Legion. I think that's probably my favorite overall, to be honest. Toronto Ultra, I'm a little up and down, but now after hearing your background, I kind of do like it a bit more. Dallas Empire, not my favorite, but I could put that as somewhere in the mid-tier. And then London Royal Ravens, not the biggest fan, but I do get the historical significance of it, and I think it falls kind of in line with what we see with the London Spitfire over there in the Overwatch League. So if I had to pick any, it'd be the Seattle Surge and the Paris Legion for me.
London Royal Ravens is such a mouthful.
It's
to
too
say.
Big. Yeah, it's too big.
So this is the one thing I find interesting here, Joey. When Overwatch League came out, Blizzard said you cannot have any kind of parent organization name in your name. But here, if this holds true, FaZe and Optic are both clearly mentioned in their team names, which I find is a little odd. It kind of, you know, catch 22 here when you tell Overwatch, hey, no, you need to have a separate identity. But now this, Joey.
I don't know if FaZe owns Atlanta, do they?
This is Atlanta. Well, I think it was. The way I saw it stylized, it was like FaZe Clan.
Oh, okay. I didn't see the stylized version. Gotcha. I didn't realize they owned Atlanta. Yeah, then that's a little sketch to me, I would have to say. Yeah, that's really not fair at all, to be completely honest. I mean, if you're going to go with the way the Overwatch League was done, they were not allowed to use the organization names, to my knowledge. And if you're going to hold a franchise league in the same standards of that, owned by the same organizing body, really, it's a little messy. Is that exactly the way it works?
That's my understanding of when the franchises were announced for Overwatch League was they were not allowed to have their parent organization's name in there. They had to be completely separate names.
Right.
That's why, you know, it's not the London Cloud Nine. It's London Spitfire. It's not, LA Immortals. It's LA Valiant. So it's... It makes sense. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying it's kind of odd that now it's a different league. Now they're kind of letting it slide a little bit more. I'm kind of curious as to why. Maybe fans are complaining about there's some kind of disconnect. You know, maybe, you know, came out Cloud Nine fans, you know, don't want to support London Spitfire because Spitfire, not Cloud Nine. I don't know. It's weird. Is this more of a question I would love to dig deeper into with the minds at Blizzard to try to really figure out why it seems like there is this change of heart when it comes to parent organizational names in these team names for these franchise leagues.
Now, with that being said, these were rumors. I don't know if they've all been correct. Officially announced at this point. Atlanta FaZe on Twitter is a fake account. So it is not nice. A real account yet. So it could also be, and maybe this is just the way it was mentioned, when these things were leaked, it could just be saying the Atlanta spot is owned by FaZe, but they don't know a name yet. So we might be reading a bit more into this than we are. But yeah, John, I believe it was that way with the Overwatch League, where an organization name could not be present in the actual team name. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with the FaZe and the Optic teams here. But overall, the names definitely leave some to be desired. There's some historical significance with some of them. Some of them feel a bit long and wordy. Other ones feel a little vague. So we'll have to see what happens. In particular, I'm excited to see what the Seattle Surge logo and colors look like, as well as the Paris Legion. Though every time I think of Legion, I automatically jump into thinking of World of Warcraft. So we'll have to see what happens with that. But this is Call of Duty. This is Call of Duty Franchise League.
Yeah, and with the Seattle Surge, the first thing I think of is that, do you remember that drink back in like the late 90s, early 2000s, Surge?
Oh, yeah.
That like made a comeback last year or something, and it's like 8,000 milligrams of caffeine and sugar in it, and it's like absolutely terrible for you, but it tastes absolutely fantastic. That I think Surge, like if you're looking for a true comeback, that's a team you sponsor. That is the team you sponsor, hands down. And look, it's perfect. Seattle has that like neon green theme with a lot of their sports teams. It's perfect. Surge is literally neon green liquid. It's perfect. It's a match made in heaven. I want this done.
There you go. And you can even sell it at the Starbucks and the Amazon grocery stores as they roll out countrywide that are based out of Seattle. Oh, so many big moves there. But speaking of big moves, the Overwatch Halloween Terror event has begun. October 15th through November 4th, we have a ton of skins. I believe it's 37 in total, about 7 emotes, 8 intros, and a ton more. So of the new skins, it looks like we have about 8 new skins coming in this year. We have an Orisa skin, an Ana skin, Widowmaker. Is that Mercy? Oh, well, no, that's yeah. Ash. Tracer, Lucio, Junkrat. And
oh, wow, it is. Wow.
I know, right? That did not look like it. And Baptiste, I believe, is the other one here that I'm seeing on Overwatch's website. So of these new skins, John, I think almost all of them look killer. This might have been the best rollout that I've seen from skins yet.
Inferno Junkrat, by far my favorite. I don't know. To me, that just looks awesome. I think fire skins have always looked amazing. It is incredibly detailed. It's very simple in the idea, but is so freaking detailed. I absolutely love it. Second place has to go to... who do I give it to?
They're so good.
See, Lucio's... I like the coloring of Lucio, but really the only difference is his hair because it's snakes. And it's like a Medusa-esque kind of...
But his arms are scaly, too. Look at the detail on his arms.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't... I'm going to go ahead. Ana, I like Ana's skin, and Widowmaker skin's really cool. Demon Orisa looks completely badass.
It's killer.
There's really no other word for it. I love it. So I'm going to go Junkrat, Inferno Junkrat, Demon Orisa, and I'm going to give third place. I'm going to give third place to Scorpion Ana.
Scorpion Ana. You mean Scorpion Widowmaker?
Scorpion Widowmaker. Snipers, they're all the same.
yeah, I would have to go Demon Orisa. I would probably go the Junkrat one as well. And honest, the other one I would go for. Yeah, I think we're right on the same page on that one. I guess my honorable mention would be the Lucio skin that you don't like as much as I do. I just feel like the detail of the scales really puts it over. It's pretty much a recolor, but then if you look at the detail on the arms, as well as the detail on the hair, really, with the snake skin kind of look, I think that really pulls it off for the honorable mention for me, at least. We usually just touch on skins, and given the time that we've already taken on this episode, I think that'll be good for that. There are play-to-earn challenges, week one, week two, and week three. You can earn different things. You can earn that Inferno Junkrat skin by playing games in week one. You can earn the Vampire Baptiste skin, as well as it looks like a spray and icon for the weeks as well if you play through week two. And week three, you have the Demon Hunter Sombra skin, as well as a spray and an icon for that. So check those out. Go play some Overwatch if you want to get some action with the Halloween Terror event.
Demon Hunter Sombra, real quick, totally looks like Assassin's Creed. Just throwing that out there.
Okay, Ezio, let's move on to Fortnite, where many people stared at a black hole for an ungodly amount of time. John, I looked at one point, and there were like hundreds of thousands of viewers watching this dang black hole for like 5, 6, 7 hours. I'm like, people, we got to do something better with our lives here.
What makes it worse, right? So this happens on Columbus Day, and my coworker brings her kids in. And, you know, we're sitting there, and they come in there. I look at them. I know they're Fortnite players. I look at them, I go, hey, guys, did you hear that Fortnite got sucked into a black hole? And they looked at me with that look of shock on their face like, what do you mean? What do you mean it was sucked into a black hole? And I show them a video of when the game was destroyed, and they are, like, going all out hysterical, like, oh my God, why did they delete this game? I can't believe this happened. They had me, because my computer is connected to these TV screens on that's mounted on the wall, I had a stream of that freaking black hole on TV the entire workday, fielding questions from my coworkers' kids about Fortnite and why Epic Games would kill their own game. How do you explain to a 9-year-old it's a whole marketing plot? It's just, you know, some strategy here to create hype. You can't. And his mom was asking me to perpetuate the lie that it's gone for years. So I did not do that because that's not cool. It's not cool, Mom. Don't do that.
Yeah, I can't lie. I would be okay with it being gone for a while, a little bit more than a black hole day. But overall, there are some major changes that came with Fortnite Chapter 2, which eventually came out of that black hole, or I guess we went into it. Not quite sure. I can't say I stood around for the whole video of that beautiful stream of a big hole. A few different things. Looking at an article here on Kotaku, John and I, obviously being huge, avid Fortnite players, know all about these updates, right?
Totally.
It's been a while since we dove into black holes, to Fortnite, to anything Fortnite related, other than the esport events. But it does look like there are quite a few major changes coming with Chapter 2. To hit on a few of those, you don't have to go back to a lobby after a match. I think this is a big win for them. The lobby loading time just felt unnecessary previously in Chapter 1 of Fortnite. So I think this is a good move there. The water at Slurpee Swamp gives you shields, according to Kotaku. The pickaxe key has changed. You can upgrade weapons now. That does seem significant for me. The ability to upgrade weapons based on materials, it looks like. I think that could be a very, very big change, especially in the competitive scene where that RNG really does play a factor. Giving the ability to upgrade based on the materials you collect should be a way to even that playing field out a bit more. You can hide in dumpsters and haystacks. Very Assassin's Creed-esque as well there. You can carry down teammates. This is kind of cool, and enemies as well, it looks like. I've seen videos of people just straight up firemen carrying people over hills, which looks absolutely insane, but I think it's a really cool mechanic, and it kind of builds on that revive mechanic we saw with Play Apex, or Apex Legends, I guess. Now you have the ability to carry these down teammates, whether it be they're running low on health and you need to get them through the storm, whether it be they're having issues building quick enough to keep up. Now you can throw them on your back and try to get away. There's just so many different competitive advantages that can come from this, so I really like that move as well. You can fish for health in dumpsters, it looks like. There are achievements. Battle stars have been replaced with XP. There are medals added as well. And according to this article, writer, matches do feel easier, this writer being Riley McLeod. So really good stuff there. Kotaku, again, is the article we're pulling this from. Check that out, as well as if you play Fortnite. We'd love to hear your thoughts on Chapter 2 as well. It sounds like it's getting a lot of praise. When you have people watching a black hole for hours, you would assume people are going to be ready and engaged to jump into the next chapter, and they have been. It's been pulling in great streaming numbers, great player numbers. Fortnite's one of those things that it always feels like it might die here and there, but it never seems to. It continues to grow on mobile, on console, on PC. It's a game that just continues to do very well, and the constant updates coming from Epic do a really good job to make it continue growing as well.
I think the most excited I've ever been for Fortnite was when I watched it go into a black hole. Um, it's back.
Rip. Good times there. Something we do play, though, is League of Legends. Maybe a little too much here and there. Riot Games had their 10-year anniversary stream. Congratulations to Riot. Absolutely beautiful stuff there with League of Legends being around for 10 years. Just to look back, we have so many great memories of League of Legends, and we could probably spend a whole podcast episode jumping on all of them.
Great memories. Joey, just real quick. I remember one time we were playing. We had a full five stack. I was in Chicago at the time. That game went like 70-plus minutes, I think. It had to be like at least 65. And we had a huge comeback in that game, and I'm pretty sure I woke up my entire neighborhood in like literally the heart of Chicago, yelling and screaming and banging my mouse so hard playing that game. But yes, go on about the amazing experiences.
I mean, there are so many good ones, like backdoors or comebacks where you have no Nexus Towers left and you're able to completely wipe the team and then run it down mid to finish. I mean, those are great memories. You and I have played some very interesting bot lanes in the past, too. I remember one in particular was Lux Leona, where you were the Lux carry and I was the Leona support, and we ended up dominating lane. And this was something was so we randomly unfair. Picked accidentally in queue. I think we both thought we were support. So magical things can happen. I remember another one where you were top Ornn and I was support Leona, and none of our team would do anything. So we just kept running around taking towers all over the place, just as the two of us, and we won the game.
It was so weird. But great times with League of Legends. It's been a fantastic 10 years playing this game. And yeah, Joey, so let's dive into the show a little bit. A lot of really cool stuff came out, all right?
Yeah, tons of big stuff. Riot Games, the Social Impact Fund, has been founded. It sounds like this was something they started last year but never came officially out with it. So this is one of those things where when you buy those skins that can go toward a cause, I'm trying to think of some of them. There's been a number. Championship Ash, I believe, went to a cause. There was a Jack skin for someone. I believe it was childhood cancer. Don't quote me on that one, but it was something along those lines where the kid suffering ended up helping design the Jack skin. It might have been Jackson Muss, actually. That one went to a charity as well. This is now another way to continue to impact those charities and bring it all into one place under this fund. There will be the ability to vote on where things go or the ability to get more details on those charities right from this fund. So I think this is a great move overall. With Riot pulling in about $1 billion a year, giving to charity is a major part, or should at least be a major part, of companies pulling in that much revenue. And I think it's a great way to give players the opportunity to buy a skin, to buy a summoner icon, a ward skin, anything like that that'll allow players to give to charities of their choice, I think is a good move, especially for a company that is making so much money already. So I do really like this move by Riot. In addition to that, we have about 300 other announcements coming out of the stream. Senna, the Shadows Embrace. Senna has been a major part of the Harrowing event for League of Legends, their Halloween event, for what feels like 4 or 5 years at least at this point. She's Lucian's wife, who's previously trapped in Thresh's Lantern, according to the lore, and she's now been named as one of the next League of Legends champions, playing a supportive marksman role. She's found her way out of that lantern, John. Creepy around there with all those souls that Thresh has been collecting on the Rift. She swam her way out, and it sounds like she will be a support type of player playing as a marksman. So something a little different. We've seen support or marksman dabble there before with some support Ashe. Misfortune has played a bit of a role there. This could also be something where we see it played as an ADC, but then having a very strong mid lane carry and top lane carry. So a lot of different viability here, but I think it's going to be a really cool pick to have on the Rift.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited for this. As someone who did play support Lux quite a bit, having that more skill shot-esque challenge for being a support, Lux is one of the only characters that, you know, every skill is literally a skill shot. You know, her bind, her shield, her AoE that she has, and her ultimate. Having a marksman support player is going to be an awesome challenge for support players, and I'm excited. The lore doesn't really make a whole lot of sense how she escaped Thresh's Lantern, but then again, League of Legends is not really known for their lore, nor the lore that is out making any sense.
It's being worked on. It's gotten better.
it's gotten better, but how does one escape from a Lantern of Souls, Riot? That's what I want to know.
Seduction,
moving
John.
Moving on. Oh, boy. Any hoosies. It sounds cool. I like the idea of this champion, and I can't wait to play her on the Rift. It's going to be her kit sounds unique from everything that's already been put out there. So super excited for that.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing Riot has done really well over these past 10 years is continue to be innovative with the kits. You see some crossover here and there between champions. When you have, 150 of them, it feels like just about at this point, there's going to be some of that crossover, but they still continue to dive in and get innovative, Senna being one of those other pieces. This one I am so excited for. As a shooter fan myself, as someone who made his name for whatever that means at this point in life, in shooters, Project A excites me quite a bit. It's going to be a tactical hero shooter. It's being described as a spiritual successor to Counter-Strike, but with also class-based skills like Overwatch. So think of like a smash-up or a mash-up, I guess, of Counter-Strike's type of shooter where there's guns and you don't really zoom in, but it's more of a click-based shooting when you're kind of like a hip-fire click-based shooting, I guess. Very similar to Counter-Strike, but then you're throwing in skills like Overwatch has. It looks graphically more like Counter-Strike. Is that more realistic, more gritty look than a cartoony look? But it's going to have those skills that are Overwatch, I guess Overwatch-like. It's hard to describe, really, because we've seen such little footage on this. But overall, I feel like this is a great game that could come out and really challenge the Counter-Strike scene more than anything. Overwatch is doing its own thing, building up a franchise. But Counter-Strike, it's grown viewership-wise, has continued to build bigger events. But the game itself hasn't really seen many major updates in recent years. This, to me, is a way to kind of jump into some of that market. Let's bring a new, fresh game to this Counter-Strike veterans, or maybe those Overwatch players who are not finding starting positions in the Overwatch League. And I feel like Riot might be hitting a niche with this new one. Are you excited for Project A, or Ares, as its name behind closed doors?
Sure, why not? I'm terrible at shooter games, so I probably won't be playing it.
Oh, you'll play. Stop that nonsense.
I just want to know, can I lock in Yasuo? Can I knock someone up with my tornado? And then, like, pump action shotgun them to death while they're caught up in the
tornado. Okay, see, that actually jumps into a major thought of mine. So Riot announced multiple games that last night. Tons happened. New games all over the place, diving into the lore of Runeterra. This shooter game, so little was said about it, and so little was shown about it, that I have no idea if it's League of Legends based. This could be a game that completely diverts itself from the League of Legends roster and is something completely different. I can't imagine Ezreal carrying around an AK-47. I don't see it happening. And if you look at gun-based characters, I mean, you have Lucian, you have Jinx, you have Caitlyn, you have Jhin. I mean, there's some out there, don't get me wrong, but there are so few. And unless you bring in blades into this shooter, which would make not much sense at all unless you're throwing them, I just don't feel like there's enough room, really, to just jump on with the League of Legends roster. Unless every new champion in League of Legends for the next 2 years is going to be gun-based, I don't see this working with the League of Legends roster, so I think we might be getting something completely different, but very heavily esports-based.
Can you imagine, like, a character like Zoe or Yumi that's, like, popping out of nowhere, and, like, they have, like, an M16? And it's, like, that would be one dangerous magical cat, you know, that just comes out of nowhere and has got a freaking full machine gun right there just blasting you away. Yeah, it'd be kind of interesting to see what more information comes out about this title, but I tend to agree with you. I feel like they're going to have a hard time making it League of Legends character-esque based. I feel like it may have to be a new group of heroes in order to make it work.
The world always needs more heroes.
Calm down, Overwatch. Wrong game.
Project L. And this would be Project Loser for me if I was playing. This is Riot developing a League of Legends-based fighting game. This looks great. We saw Darius and we saw Ahri in the demo. You can use the League of Legends roster here. They already have skills. You can build upon those, expand upon those in a fighter-style game. I think this is going to straight up compete with Street Fighter, with Marvel vs. Capcom, Tekken, all of those games. I think this can compete against right from the gate. Obviously, they have cult followings. I think Smash, it's not really going to compete with because it's very different looking. But I think it will eventually pull some people from Street Fighter and Tekken and games like that. I think it's going to be really good. I suck at fighter games. I think it would be fun to cast. I think it would be fun to watch and follow. If I was playing it, I would probably not do too hot.
Well, Joey, we can both watch from the sidelines because my fighter game skills are... Much like when I played them in the past. Don't really mess with them too much anymore. I'll stick with my MMOs and my MOBAs, please, and thank you.
Absolutely. But I think you would also give Project F a try. Very few details on you see, we're slightly delirious from this past weekend. Project F, very few details, so F for few. Details released on this one, a new social experience where players can explore the world of Runeterra with friends. I have seen people post that this is an MMO. I've seen people post that it's just simply some kind of RPG. I've seen Dungeon Runner. I've seen Dungeon Diver. I've seen Platformer. I don't know what the heck this game is. It looks gorgeous. I think the art style is very unique. I don't think it's an MMO. I don't feel like it's deep enough skill-based, at least from what we saw, to be an MMO. I feel like it's going to be something along the lines of a platformer. Do you ever play Castle Crashers?
No.
Okay, that's just one that's coming to mind. It's a very different art style than that. It's like a 3D style is what this one in particular looks like. But I think it's going to be that type of style where you can have friends drop into the environment and just play it out. Maybe like Remnant, Thy Ashes that came out recently. Something in that vein, something in that style where people can drop in, play through events, play through areas, maybe some loot-based stuff here and there. I don't think it's going to be a full MMO, though. I think that's something that might come later down the line, maybe Project M. But we'll have to wait and see. I think this is going to be a really good game, but obviously it's still very early on in development if we're not seeing much more yet on it. One of the ones we did see the most on, and boy, there's a lot of announcements, Legends of Runeterra. John, I know you love playing the Innkeeper over and over in Hearthstone, trying to make it past that tutorial. Well, now you get another try. Maybe you can play up against Teemo in this tutorial. Riot's answer to Hearthstone, Magic, Artifact, all of those different card games out there that are free-to-play in name. This will also be free-to-play in name, but it is not spring-loaded with RNG card packs. There will be no massive card pack buying in this one. There are ways to unlock... it's really just the more you play, the ability you get to unlock these, not really packs, but open these boxes with some RNG to them. But you can also buy cards outright. So if you want this Elementalist Lux card, you can just straight up buy it outright with cash or buy it outright with in-game currency that you've earned. In addition to that, there are limits. So when new card packs come out or new expansions get announced, they are going to limit the ability to buy. So if you are Money Bags Byram over there, you can't go down and just throw hundreds of dollars at these card packs to come out on top of everyone just because you spent money. So they're going to try to do their best of finding a balance where developers can be supported by purchases and players can purchase what they want, but everything will be earnable in-game at a reasonable rate as well, and buyers will not be able to completely buy their way to those legend ranks as they are in Hearthstone, or those top ranks, whatever they're called in Runeterra. My guess, probably Challenger if they go with the system we already see in League of Legends. I think this looks great. It brings a lot of fresh new mechanics that are similar to Magic and Hearthstone, but also very different in other aspects. So I think the mechanical CCG genre is pulled in with this, but at the same point, there's enough fresh intel and fresh features, I guess you could say, and a different perspective as far as packs and regions coming into this game, as well as the riveting lore of League of Legends that is still being expanded upon, which we'll keep diving into with other features coming down later in the stream. But I am excited for this. I don't see me diving in and putting tons of time into a card game. I tried with Hearthstone. I fell behind because I wasn't willing to spend the monstrous amounts of money that people do in Hearthstone. I think with this being free to play, it could be easier to keep up with. At the same point, with so many good games out there, I don't know if I'm willing to devote a ton of time to this one.
Why'd you have to bring up the Innkeeper again, man? That was like a one day thing. Like that was hurtful.
I know you and the Innkeeper still have a drink here and there every once in a while.
No, I've made it past the Innkeeper. Then I promptly uninstalled, but I still made it past the Innkeeper. How dare you? False representation.
Oh my gosh. League of Legends Wild Rift. This is something we knew was coming in some fashion, one way or another. Again, with Tencent being the majority owner, you knew we were going to see mobile games as Tencent pushes a huge market in mobile gaming in China, at least. League of Legends Wild Rift is going to be League of Legends with a differentiated map. They're changing it up a bit. They're cutting it. They're making it smaller. The rune selection is smaller. The champion selection is smaller. It's pretty much mini League of Legends. The big point behind this, Certain mechanics work on phones and others don't as easily. In addition to that, they want it to be accessible and easier for people to jump into than League of Legends. If I'm bringing new guy John around to play League of Legends, he's going to have such a hard time jumping in with all of these hundreds of characters, with all of these runes. But now with people that might not be on PC or might not have the time to dedicate to PC, they can jump in on mobile or console with League of Legends Wild Rift. And again, it's going to be simplified rosters, simplified runes, simplified map, so the games are going to go quicker, so comfort of wrist, as well as an ease of getting into the game much better than it would if they ported over 150-some champions.
Yeah, so the one thing about this Diablo 3 mobile launch that they're talking about... Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry, wrong mobile game. Yeah, cool, awesome, I'm not going to play it. I'm going to play League of Legends on my PC. Plain and simple. I have no desire to play Wild Rift on my mobile device. I will not download it. I don't even... This was probably my least exciting... The announcement that got me, like, 1 out of a 10 on the excitement scale. I don't know. Mobile games just... I don't know. Like, water down League. Why? Like, yeah, I get it for the new player. Fine, that's great. But what about the people who have been playing since beta? What about the people who have been playing, I don't know, for the 10 years that you're celebrating? Like, this does not make me excited at all to have a mobile watered-down version of this game. But that's just me. Other than that, cool, awesome.
Straight-up absolutely amazing move, in my opinion. I'm with you, John. I'm not going to play it. I like mobile games. This is not one that I want to dedicate 20 minutes to playing a game of League of Legends on my phone when I could just go to the computer. And yeah, maybe I'm out of town. I still don't think I would turn to mobile League of Legends to play, but it is a proven market. You look at other games out there. The other one Tencent makes that I'm blanking on right now, Age of Kings, something like that. It's something along those lines, but it's a giant, absolutely ginormous game. Both in North America is one of the top charts on Android and iOS, as well as a very, very, very popular game over in China. So the mobile games are going to do extremely well. League of Legends is already so massively popular, they're going to get downloads. And you know what? You and I will make a bet right now that you're going to download that game because they're going to do some kind of exclusive skin if you play one game in it. And you'll want that skin, and you'll probably download it just to get. And it'll probably be a Lux skin because Lux doesn't have enough skin. She's only, what, 25 at this point?
She never has enough skins, Joey. Her and Rakan, you leave them both alone. How dare you?
Oh, I love Rakan.
You are on a roll.
Rakan can have more skins. I'm okay with that. Lux is nice. She's a very nice person. She's got a comic already as well to go with her 25 skins. I don't know if she needs another one, at least for now. But she's pulling in more players. I mean, they're at, like, what, 120-some million monthly active users nowadays with TFT involved. So big, big growth numbers there for League of Legends over 10 years. And as much as you and I probably won't play much of Wild Rift, I have a feeling many, many players will. TFT is headed to your mobile device. This is one I will be playing. I enjoy some auto chess. I have 3 auto chess apps on my phone, and I barely keep up with any of them. TFT is one of those ones that I think I might dive more into. It becomes more accessible on commutes and different things like that. If it's available on a mobile device, I think that would help me invest more in TFT than some of these other auto chess games that I've invested more into simply because they're available on mobile as well. And it's easier to climb when you can play when you're away from the computer too, because I'm not always going to choose an auto chess game when I'm at the computer, but on my phone, there's more limited choices based on what I want to play. If you put TFT there, I think you cut into that Underlords market, the auto chess market, the chess rush market, all those other ones as well. League of Legends Esport Manager. I love virtual manager games. I'm playing a hockey one right now where I'm in like a gold one league or something like that. Football Manager is one of the most popular manager games in the world. I've played so many of these manager titles, and I've always wanted a really good esports one, and there's never been one out there. I think this is going to be an amazing move. I don't think it's going to have the biggest player base out there, but I do think you're going to pick up some people, and maybe eventually you move some of those guys in Football Manager to at least give esports a try. I don't see it being massive numbers, but at the same point, I think it will be a fun game. It's going to debut with the LPL in China, and I think that's probably your best market to start this in as well. Arcane. John, we all know you're a weeb. And now we have a League of Legends anime to watch as well, and I will be joining you, of course. I'm excited for this. I think the League of Legends comic books have debuted very well. They've built upon that lore with both Lux and Ashe. They've been a great way for fans to dive into it more, into their favorite characters, into their favorite realms, whether it be the Frelgelord, whether that be Ionia. There's just so many different options that the comic books present. Now bringing in anime with these already rich characters and being able to dive more into that lore that's still constantly being developed by Riot Games, I think is going to be a really, really good move. And again, another way to continue to build upon that audience. I feel like a lot of anime watchers do play League of Legends and vice versa. At the same point, I do think this gives more room for growth and more ways to say, hey, thank you for playing for the last 10 years.
That was uncalled for, but very, very accurate. Yeah, I'm actually excited for this. I think this is going to be fantastic. This is actually something I think the community's wanted for a long time, some kind of side multimedia medium, if you will, to get more information about the game, to get more information about the characters we love, to add that personality to that character, to that short story that we get with these champions, with these heroes when we log on to this game. I think this is so overdue. The hype is real. I really can't wait for Arcane to come out. I'll definitely be watching that. The comics have been absolutely fantastic so far. Arcane, I mean, let's be real here. It's going to be awesome. I think it's definitely long overdue, and I think a lot of fans are going to love it. And I think you're going to get a lot more dedicated and passionate fans because now you have a series-based medium to give fans and people who love the game and want more lore of this game that information they so desperately want, so desperately need to better understand these characters and why they connect with these characters. That's the biggest thing, is why do people connect with these characters and their story? There's some reason that they personally connect with them and they want to know more about these characters. That's how you create lifelong fans, not just by putting up short blurb paragraphs in a video game, but by making a short series, an anime, a comic book. I think it's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and if you guys are lucky enough, maybe we can end up doing a live stream, a live watch of it in our little Fnatic and C9 hoodies.
Ooh. Perfect.
As you can tell, I'm very tired. So that's another big thing, and we also have a League of Legends Origins documentary being released. I believe it's on Netflix, and I think it launched yesterday. So that's out there as well, jumping into not only the development of League of Legends, but how the esports scene has grown over the past few years as well. So definitely check that out if you're interested. I think it'll be a really cool documentary, and I will probably be watching it myself this weekend. Over to our results section. This one, I believe, happened a week ago, but we did not have our episode last week due to everything going on with the Nationals and the wedding and so on and so forth. Corsair DreamHack Masters Malmo in 2019. Huge event over there in Sweden, and it was taken home by a Swedish crown, and that is Fnatic taking down Vitality 2-1. 14-16 on map 1. Vitality wins that one. Fnatic takes them to overtime in map 2, 19-16, and then wins it outright 16-13 in the final map. A huge win for Fnatic and their new roster. A lot of new rosters debuting in this particular event. Vitality with a newer roster as well. Again, not complete roster overhauls, but a player switch here and there can really change up the dynamics of a team and the communication in-game. So both these two teams that made it to the finals just went through roster changes, and it's a huge credit to them to make it all the way there after those changes. Fnatic took down Astralis on their way with the semifinal win over them 2-0. Astralis being the unrelenting, really no one questions them as the number one team in the world right now. Fnatic coming out with this new roster 2-0ing them is huge for Fnatic. And then Vitality in the other side taking down Na'Vi 2-1 as well in their semifinal matchup with that new roster too. If anything, John, I think Astralis is still the cemented top team in the league right now, but it's showing that these new rosters do pack a punch, that there is power behind them, whether it be Fnatic, whether it be Vitality. G2's went through some roster changes. I believe Na'Vi themselves went through some roster changes as well. With all these roster changes coming in and the shakeups of the scene, it doesn't look like it's just going to be Astralis and Team Liquid batting up at the top anymore. There are going to be more contenders in there as we continue to move forward with the CSGO season. So if anything, as a CSGO fan, as someone who enjoys watching these CSGO events, I think this is going to be much more entertaining now, not assuming Astralis automatically makes it to the final, now that some of these teams can compete with those higher level teams. Last but not least, League of Legends Worlds is in full swing. Again, this has been a very long episode, but we cannot go without touching on Worlds. To give you guys the current standings, Group A, we'll actually just talk about each group as we go. Group A has G2 Esports 3-0 on top. Not a huge surprise, as they are the tournament favorite for the betting world right now. Griffin 2-1, Cloud9 1-2, and Hong Kong Attitude, which we can say on the Level Up podcast, 0-3. Sorry.
Yikes. So, I mean, yeah, G2 being top here, I don't think that has anyone really surprised. The real question here is who's going to finish number two. Is it going to be Griffin? Is it going to be Cloud9? Cloud9, it's been interesting. They're coming down to their last lifeline here. They need Griffin.
Interesting,
yeah. This is, Cloud9's coming down to their last opportunity here to do something, and it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to overcome Griffin. They're going to need some help. Hong Kong's pretty much done. G2 pretty much has the top seed wrapped up. So the interesting one here to watch in Group A is going to be how Cloud9 handles the pressure on the brink of elimination going forward in the Worlds.
Yeah, I think unless you're from Hong Kong, 50% of the people are choosing Griffin or Cloud9 to be the second seed in this group. A lot of people think Cloud9 has that group magic of the NA that they've had in past years. It seems like Cloud9 is just not killable in the group stage, and they always seem to turn it around on day two. So look forward to that. There is going to be a lot of action there. Griffin as well, though. Griffin is a team that lost its coach prior to this Worlds. They actually got rid of him themselves. I want to say someone said he's back, but I haven't seen a statement on that. But Griffin looking like they're beatable. They are a team that's playing well, and they're very talented, but they are beatable. I think this second seed is really going to come down to the Cloud9-Griffin match. If they end up going against each other and one of them wins, obviously, if it's Cloud9 in this case, I think we do go to a tiebreaker where it's between those two to come out in that second seed. I don't see either team beating G2 unless G2 really ints hard, and I don't see any team losing to Hong Kong Attitude unless they play really bad. So I think it's going to come down to a tiebreaker between those two if Cloud9 can force it. Over to Group B, we have Fun Plus Phoenix, which has not looked like they're having as much fun as people expected. CTBC J Team, GAM Esports, the Gigabyte Marines of old, and Splice. I, for one, am very disappointed in both Splice and Fun Plus. Fun Plus has not looked like the dominant team that we expected them to be. They actually won one of their games that they should have lost. I think any team with half decency would have been able to close out the game. That might have been against Splice even, but they just threw it away. Splice was not able, I think it was Splice, I might be wrong, but they were not able to close it out. Phoenix should have been done. Their head was up against the fire. They were about to be decapitated. However you want to look at it, it was an overmatch. It was done. It was you and I coming back from No Towers at the Nexus, and somehow FunPlus pulled it off. They should have lost. That's a win there. So I think this group is a lot closer than what the standings show. Obviously, only one win between these two teams, but those wins that did come out for FunPlus and that loss that, I want to say it was Splice, I think that could have easily gone the other way. So I think this one is going to be almost a coin toss coming out of day, or I guess week two, if you want to call it that. J Team, though, looking very strong, and I think they could surprise.
Yeah, Group B, really one of two groups out of the four here that are really, it's still any organization's group. There's not a clear-cut winner in this group. It's a lot of, mediocre organizations in this group. Joey, I think you hit the nail on the head. Fun Plus Phoenix is not exactly playing that great. The fact that they're 2-1, I think they should be very happy that they're at 2-1. Splice isn't out of it. GAM isn't out of it. CTBC's not out of it. It really is a toss-up along with one other group that we'll touch on later.
This group. Group C, we have SK Telecom T1 at 3-0. I don't think either one of you are very surprised, or either one of us is very surprised by that. Royal Never Give Up has not given up yet. They are 2-1 with that loss coming to SKT. Fnatic 1-2, and Clutch Gaming at 0-3. Okay, let's start off. I'm not surprised by SKT. I'm not surprised by Clutch. I think Clutch is probably going to go 0-6 unless they can pull off a surprise victory against probably Fnatic or RNG. SKT, I think, goes 6-0. I would not be surprised if that ends up happening. Oh, Fnatic. Okay. Oh, I could light this one up.
Could I just want something, one thing real quick?
Uh-huh.
Look at that bromance synergy between Cloud9 and Fnatic. Both in third place in their group. Both at 1-2. Name me two better organizations that do this on an international level. I bet you can. I just bet you can.
No, and they've pulled it off so many times before where they've been behind in their group and then they come back in that second week of play. So it's very possible that they come out of this. In particular, Fnatic has been very disappointing to watch. I feel like they've looked sloppy, but in particular, they're inting in the draft for me. Some of these drafts by Joey Youngbuck throughout the whole freaking season, in particular Worlds right now, I just don't get them. Okay, let's play the common sense game, John. So you're up against a vision-heavy team What champion should you not put your support player on?
A Bruiser.
No, a Yumi. Why in the hell would you put someone on, like, Hillsong, the biggest roaming support out there, and you put him on a freaking cat that sits on someone's shoulder practically, and he can't clear vision? So SKT has the map lit up like a nightclub late at night with disco balls everywhere, and all these little vision wards popping up everywhere. They can make all their calculated decisions, just like South Korean teams always have, and Fnatic's not able to contest vision because of that stupid pick. And you take out the aggressive player that you have that sets up games with Hillsong. I do have to give him credit. His Yumi is very good. He ended up doing the most damage as the freaking Yumi. Like, he was out damaging mid laners throughout the tournament, which is absolutely insane, which is a crazy build on that cat. But outside of that, they're not able to play the macro game that Fnatic is known for. They can't play that early game aggression without Hillsong making those aggressive plays alongside Broxah. They can't clear out the vision that Korean teams are able to set down like a mastermind of SKT. It's one thing to challenge a team like SKT. It's another thing to try to challenge a team like SKT when they have complete vision of the map. It's just, it's a bad draft choice and it's not going to work. Then on top of that, Nemesis is great. Nemesis is cold steel, but you drafted a Mikhail and no other carries. We've seen Reckless go three games, not on an ADC champion. That tilts me as well. You have one of the better ADCs in the world. People can argue, oh, Reckless is getting old. Reckless has in a smaller champion pool. But let's at least see him on an ADC. Day two, I want to see him go up against the powerhouse of Teddy on SKT. I want to see him take Uzi head on. I think RNG still has Fnatic's number. I think they've won 9 out of the last 11 games against Fnatic. And I think Fnatic is a very tall order. In predicting, I predicted that Fnatic and RNG would go 1-1 and Fnatic would win the tiebreaker or Clutch would take a game off RNG. I do think RNG is going to come out of this one, unfortunately. I think it's going to be SKT RNG. Losing a bit of faith in Fnatic depending on how Joey Youngbuck drafts. If he comes up with a more standard draft, I think Fnatic could come out of this. On the opposite side, Royal Never Give Up has shown that they can go up head-to-head against SKT, one of the stronger teams in the world, but they've also shown that a team like Fnatic, who might not even be playing with the best draft in their order, really, can end up pushing them to the limit as well. So, I think just like Group A, that second spot is up for grabs between Fnatic and Royal Never Give Up. If Fnatic can take a game off RNG, just like their lover there, Cloud9, I think it can force a tiebreaker that could get really interesting to decide that second seed.
So let me get this straight. You're just more upset the fact that he was on Yumi than the fact that in one of your drafts, your bot lane was literally Morgana Blitzcrank.
Why the hell? Like, I don't understand these picks. Like, I get it. You want to put Reckless on mages. Look, if he really wants to play mages, if he doesn't want to play an AD carry, you swap him to mid lane and put Nemesis down there. Or maybe you throw him on a Tristana that he doesn't want to play in bot lane and make him go mid lane with it and throw Nemesis with a mage in bot lane. There's ways to move around this. I don't know what the hell is going on behind the scenes, whether it be the team, whether it be the coaching, but this drafting has been terrible this year. It's been really disappointing. Joey Youngbuck as a team director was great. Coming in as a coach, it's been very lackluster from a fan couch analyst perspective, let's say. There's been a lot left to be desired. And if Fnatic goes out, I want to see them go out swinging. I want to see them playing regular comps. I don't want none of this Garen Yumi trash. I don't want no just one carry Kayle in the mid lane. Give me something interesting. Let them fight. Let them fight for their lives. If anything, maybe they just draft without a coach on stage at this point, because if Youngbuck is making the decisions, they're not good ones.
Joey, after this show, I want us to go run Morgana Blitzcrank bot lane, please.
Not happening. Not happening. That is so dumb. Group D. Group D. Damwon Gaming 2-1. Team Liquid 2-1. Invictus Gaming 2-1. AHQ Esports 0-3. Wow, this is a mess. I didn't realize it was this messy. So in this one, I predicted Damwon and Invictus Gaming to come out as the first and second seed. I still feel really comfortable with that. I think NA is putting too much hope on Team Liquid. They're a very good team, but you look at Double Lift's record. I don't think he's ever made it out of the group stage at Worlds. If this team makes it out, I think it's going to be more on Jensen's back and on Impact's back. I think Double Lift will do well. I think he's a great carry, but you're also going up against really great teams in Damwon and Invictus. The Invictus bot lane, and particularly the mid lane with Showmaker on Damwon and Rookie and Invictus Gaming, I think are very strong. If Jensen can keep them even, that's going to be Team Liquid's biggest chance, as well as the top lane. I mean, the Shy on Invictus. You have Nagari on Damwon. if Impact can keep them somewhat even or get ahead of them, I think they could do well. So for me, it all comes down to the mid lane and the top lane in particular to see who comes out of this one. I'm still going to go Damwon and Invictus, though.
Yeah, I think Team Liquid actually does have a chance here, and I totally agree with you. I do think it'll probably be on the back of Jensen. Impact being a former world champion himself. Let's not forget about Core JJ, a former world champion himself down there with Double Lift now. And I do feel like Core JJ really has kind of helped Double Lift grow a little bit more in these international competitions. Double Lift, not exactly an easy ADC to work with. It has a very unique style and definitely needs a support player that kind of complements that style. And I think Core JJ brings that experience that can really, you know, give Double Lift that kind of like on the rift check real quick. Like, hey, you know, cool, awesome, I know you can do this, but should you do this? I do feel like Core JJ does make a big difference there for Team Liquid as well. Really, really excited to see that they're in a three-way tie with Damwon and Invictus Gaming. I think that's incredibly huge for Team Liquid. Could this be the year that they punch their ticket out of group stages? Will Cloud9 be able to make that amazing comeback? If you're an NA fan, if you're a Western-based esport organization fan in League of Legends, there's a lot to look forward to going into the second round here for the group stages. Can Cloud9 pull a Cloud9 and come back from the brink of defeat, from the brink of elimination? Can Fnatic bounce back from what Joey said sounds like a fairly disappointing showing so far? I mean, Blitzcrank, Morgana. But other than that, Team Liquid really being the Western world's hope right now. And it's kind of exciting to see. A lot of people would write Team Liquid off in the past. Last year, they had a very poor showing. And this year, they're really kind of bouncing back. Can they maintain that same 2-1 pace they had in the first go-around? Group D, really still any man's game or any organization's game, I should say, unless you're AHQ. You're pretty much right there with Hong Kong Attitude, Clutch Gaming. You're pretty much done. Enjoy your time until you're eliminated. Have fun and go home. But other than that, you know, Group D is still a toss-up right up there with Group B. There's a lot of exciting action coming up in Worlds for League of Legends, and I can't wait to see if Cloud9 can pull off a Cloud9, if Fnatic can pull off a Cloud9, if Team Liquid can hold on to that 2-1 pace, finish the group stage 4-2, which would almost guarantee them a pass through into the next round. So much to look forward to going into the second round here.
Right, and both teams have done it before. C9 has done it in years past. Fnatic actually broke the record 2 years ago, coming back from, had to win 4 in a row, actually, on day 2. The 3 matches plus a tiebreaker or something, or maybe it was a double tiebreaker. But they've shown that they can do it before, both these teams, both of our teams, that have not come out as strong in week 1. Just hitting a couple more things as we wrap up. Tomorrow, October 17th, is going to be the finale for Group B. Those matches start at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, wrapping up around 3 p.m. Eastern Time, depending if there's any technical difficulties out, though, so check those out. Friday, October 18th, is going to be the Group A conclusion, with Cloud9 and Griffin vying for that second spot. Saturday, we have the Group C crazy conclusion between RNG and Fnatic, most likely. And then on Sunday, we have the conclusion of Group D, with Damwon, Team Liquid, and IG all sitting at 2-1 currently, moving into that second week. So really exciting stuff, John. I think we have a great week of Worlds ahead, as well as just continuing to watch all these roster moves in both League of Legends, Overwatch League, and much more. So we'll have to keep up with all of that, and we're excited to talk about it on Twitter, on here on the podcast. Hit us up. Let's play some League.
Well, Nation, that will do it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get access to exclusive content that nobody else in the world can get, unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to the Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play, or even shoot us a comment on SoundCloud. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from all of our listeners so much, we have other ways for you to interact with us. Joey, where else can Level Up Nation go to interact with us in the show?
Listeners and viewers, head on over to Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook and find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. In addition to that, we stream regularly on Twitch, twitch.tv/OTN_live. We're recording this one on a Wednesday. It's a little off our schedule, but typically Mondays at 7 p.m. We get a nice little crowd here in Twitch chat. Come join the fun.
All right, make sure you tune in next week. Maybe we'll have our voices and we'll be well-rested by then, Joe. Who knows? But next week, as we're going to continue to cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news, do your ears a favor. Hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
level up.
Level up. And we're out.